Ron Coomer on deck.
And Ronnie's been red hot. He's been in the zone.
Ron Coomer.
Let's see if the Cubs can respond.
We're helping him out.
Coomer drives one into right center field. Long run, Pierre. Pierre dives, misses it. It bounces all the way to the wall.
That's a nice knock for the old hometown boy, isn't it?
Chicago Cubs radio analyst.
What a ball game. The wait is over, right? It is over. The Cubs are World Series champions. How does that sound, partner?
1999 American League All-Star.
From the American League All-Stars. Infielder Ron Coomer.
The Coom Dog with Mully and Haw.
Woohoo!
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ron Coomer is one of God's great men, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Ron, good morning. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, Mike. David, how are you boys doing today?
How thin is the air? Do you sense it already? Do you feel like a little gasping?
Well,
a bit?
I didn't walk all the way up to Vail, so I did not feel it too much yesterday walking around downtown. You do feel it, though, when you're playing. Let's say you hit a ball in the gap, you hit a triple, you feel it. But, it, you know, for 3 days, it's not terrible. I think it's much more difficult for the guys that play here and then leave and come back, you know, every other week. I think it's a little more difficult for them.
Taking any Colorado practices? You and your guy Deion Sanders hang out together?
Yes, no.
I did play against Deion when he was in Cincinnati, but I would not say I went over and watched their workout by any means.
Well, I saw there was a pickup truck left at the stadium there. I didn't know if you had anything to do with that. Cool.
No, yeah, not me. No, I did not.
So the Cubs come in needing to sweep. Let's be honest about it. They have 16 games left. They're 5 back in the wild card standings. If they go 13-3, the Mets would still have to play below 500, which is unrealistic, but still not impossible. As the Cubs get ready to play the Rockies this weekend, Coom, how would you describe their state of mind?
I think very good. I you know. When you look at what they just did in L.A., they played good baseball. They played pretty clean baseball up until the last game. You know, and that series just goes to show you, the team that plays clean baseball won. Dodgers played a bad game and a middle game. Defensively, Cubs took advantage. Cubs made some base running mistakes in game 3. And the Dodgers ended up winning a game when the Cubs really had a great chance to win that game. So I think their frame of mind is good. But it's what you're saying. The reality of it is you have to, you know, not really win out, but you really need the Mets to get on like a 3 or 4 game losing streak.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And you win and gain some ground quickly.
I guess, Ron, when I think about what's going on with the Cubs, you go back to playing the Yankees at home and scoring 2 runs in a series. And they won a game, so that was at least a good thing. Then they go to the Dodgers, and all of a sudden, what was it, 25 runs in 3 games? And then you look at the numbers, and apparently they're scoring more than a run better on the road. And then you're kind of like, what in the name of God has happened to Wrigley Field? What was it, the scoreboards, the advertising? What's changed the wind to the point where the Cubs are more than a run at on the road as opposed to at home?
Well, I'll say this about Wrigley. The scoreboards, especially the one in the left field, has helped the hitters. You know, when the wind is blowing in, it blocks the wind somewhat, so the ball carries even better to left field with the wind blowing in. But when the wind is blowing in, I say it carries better. Doesn't mean it carries well. There's a big difference. You know, the wind blowing in, Wrigley is 2 types of ballparks and always has been. When the wind is blowing out, as we know, it's a great hitter's park, blah, 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 ball flies everywhere, and it's good. When the wind blows in, you got to keep the ball out of the air unless you're a great, big, strong guy. When you look at that series against the Yankees didn't score many runs either.
Right.
You know, they struggled. You know, I don't think was there a home run hit in the series? I don't think there was a home run hit in this. Maybe game 3. But anyway, they were just, you know, Judge didn't hit the ball out. He hit 2 balls to the track that I know in watching his trot out of the box, he thought they were home runs and they weren't. So, you know, that's just Wrigley Field. You got to keep the ball out of the air. You got to learn to play more of a smaller, small ball type game. You've got to be able to move runners along and situational hit. That's just the way it is at Wrigley.
What got into the Cubs Wednesday night in L.A., running the bases? PCA's caught. He makes things happen, so I understand maybe, and he's also a rookie, the aggressive base running by him. You can't have that blunder. But I was hard on him yesterday, and it doesn't seem any easier to accept today. Seiya Suzuki can't make that second out at third base under those circumstances, and Craig Counsell called it inexcusable, and I couldn't have agreed more.
I agree. The one thing Pete has to remember is not everybody's as fast as he is. And when there's a base hit to the outfield, that doesn't necessarily mean that the runner on second is going to score, right? That's just not always going to be the case. And he basically was running with his head down. And he came flying around first base and was not looking at the runner ahead of him. That's definitely a mistake. He got excited and, it's kind of a rookie mistake. And then it compounded with Michael Busch leaving third base and getting into a rundown and making out, between home and third, where if Michael just stays at third base, the Cubs have second and third and two outs instead of first and second and two outs. If Pete takes off from third, it's different. Michael Busch is probably going to be out in a rundown. So the Cubs just made some base running mistakes, and I don't know what Suzuki was thinking in that situation. I'm sure he was thinking, if I steal a bag, we got the tying run now as a second base. But you don't think of the ramifications if you get a bad jump and you're thrown out, and that's what happened. And yeah, that was a killer because Kopech was really, really on the ropes. So
yeah.
those are just base running, terrible base running mistakes that cost you a game.
Yeah, it was like Kopech saw Chicago and he reverted to how he pitched on the south side as opposed to how he's pitched with the Dodgers. I mean, he was terrible. Didn't he walk three guys? I mean,
yeah,
to not take advantage of that. Good God.
Yeah, if we don't get thrown out at third, I think we win that game. I really do. Or they take him out right after that hitter. Because I just don't think he was capable of getting it back and throwing enough strikes to where it would have worked out for them.
That's just really more frustrating to hear you put it in those terms. Because I also got to ask you this, Coom, while we're second-guessing and lamenting the last loss. Jordan Wicks, at what point in that first inning do you realize a sense of urgency in that game and not allow him to stay on the mound to give up four home runs? Is it after the second homer or the third? Because by the fourth, it's too late.
Yeah, I'm not in that dugout, and those are decisions. I'm sure they didn't want to burn out their entire bullpen, and that's what they're thinking going into Colorado, where you've got, you're going to have to throw eight innings of baseball or eight and a third innings of baseball in L.A. out of the pen, and then come to Colorado where, it can kill your bullpen. So I'm sure those thoughts are going through Council's mind. But who'd have guessed they keep hitting home runs. That was unbelievable, actually.
It was really something.
And in Dodger Stadium, too, which is not the easiest home run hitting ballpark. That was a tough one.
The Ohtani homer, that thing was out before he was done swinging. I mean, that was like as fast a home run. It was just like whoop, that's it. That was his 47th homer. He got his 48th stolen base. I mean, what do you think of this 50-50 thing that he is on track for?
I think it's absolutely amazing. I really do. When you look at a guy that can do things like that in our game, it's nobody else has done it. I mean, what else do you say? There's only certain things that you look at and go, nobody did that, right? You talk about Babe Ruth, you talk about players in that caliber. There's only a few that you even, Barry Bonds when he was on a roll, but we all know he was enhanced and doing that stuff. But all these things that went on, you're just like, holy cow, 50-50. And here's the other kicker about that guy. he's throwing in the bullpen, and his arm is like ready to go. So he's going to pitch. He was throwing bullpens while we were in L.A. So you're going to get a guy that's a 50-50 guy that's going to be a dominant pitcher, too. Pretty amazing.
It is
like
amazing.
Really amazing.
Yeah, MVP really of the National amazing. League.
I've already predicted they're going to play the Yankees in the seventh game of the – he's going to come in and replace Kopech and strike out Judge to win the title.
Well, it's one of those things. He did that in the World Baseball Classic.
Yes.
He was on the mound and finished out the game to win the World Baseball Classic. And you wonder – I was asking Rick Monday this, you know, the other day. We were sitting in our booth, and – I said, is there like an outside chance that he pitches? And he just kind of shrugged his shoulders like, you know, you just never know. Right? I mean, if he's throwing, and I mean, he threw a full-length bullpen with all his pitches. You know, what if he comes to the management and says, I think I can help us in the bullpen?
Then he helps you in the bullpen.
Whatever he wants.
What do you say to that?
Thank you very much. What you do is you do what Show did the other day. You tip your cap and you say thank you.
That's exactly right.
So, Coombs, speaking of pitchers trying to come back, Justin Steele threw on the trip, and it looks like he could be on the way back. What's the risk-reward calculus in terms of what bringing him back would mean, and do you pay attention to the standings when making that decision?
I would say yes, you do pay attention to the standings. If the Cubs keep gaining ground, then he pitches again. I would think if he doesn't, if the Cubs don't gain ground in the wild card, then to me I don't know. Then there's, why would you do that? You know, I don't think that would, you know, he's your ace of your staff. He's a guy that's been, you know, you really need him for the future. You know, if you're not pitching for anything and there's only 2 weeks left of the season or just over 2 weeks, you know, if he's going to pitch one more game or two possibly, is it worth it? So I think these next few games here will determine a lot of that. If the Cubs, you know, lose ground in the wild card, I don't see him coming back. But, you know, I could be wrong. Maybe he just feels really good and he wants to pitch. And, you know, I don't know that from Justin yet. So we'll just see what happens.
It's you know, it's just one of these things now where you look at it and you say the room for failure, the room for any kind of – it's gone. The margin for error has disappeared, and now it's just you got to get the best out of everyone every night. In Colorado, you just worry that – and I don't know that this could happen, but one bad pitching performance, one guy who kind of – meets a moment you didn't expect him to, can waylay whatever your plans were.
Absolutely. This is a difficult place to play. It just is. It always has been for the Cubs. It is for everybody that comes here. You always, you know, the game just plays different. The ballpark is different. You know, it's a huge playing surface. So the outfielders, for the Cubs, it's kind of plays in their favor because you've got maybe the fastest center fielder in the league. And with Pete out there, you know, because it's just such a good place to hit. You know, it's not just the home runs, but it's how big the outfield is and the ball's falling in because the outfielders have to play so deep to protect the gaps. So it's just a great place to hit. And you're right. One bad two-inning stretch by a pitcher can flip the game around and you can't catch up. So it's a difficult place to play. It always has been. With that being said, every time I was a free agent, I told my agent, call Colorado. I want to hit there.
Yeah, that's funny. So, Coom, we're going to see a lot of the Dodgers in October, as we talked about. And I'm just curious your impressions coming out of L.A. of Yamamoto, who we haven't seen a lot of this season, but also just how positioned they are, how well positioned they might be to make a run in October.
I would say the Dodgers, Hernandez hitting behind Freeman, their right fielder, with him in the lineup, that really extends their lineup. They have four guys that can really do damage. And then you got Muncy, who doesn't hit for an average, but as we know through the years, he's a dangerous guy and he's always been a big RBI guy and now he's healthy. So the Dodgers' issues are, to me, all on the mound. You know, you got you know, Glasnow and Yamamoto, and both of those guys are, you know, 1 and 1A when you talk about starting pitching. They've got to be healthy. You know, Yamamoto threw 4 innings and he was dominant and he looked really good. Glasnow, you got to figure, is he going to be able to pitch? That's, you know, what's going to be his story. The Dodgers are going to win or lose in the playoffs because of their starting pitching. If they get their starting pitching back, they can be a force. If they don't, they could be in trouble.
Ron, I can't believe we've gotten this far without talking about Pete Crow Armstrong and the way in which his elite defense has been met by elite offense, really dating back to August when he really kind of started making this move. And he's just been playing so well on both sides of the ball, right? Playing great defense and now hitting as well as anybody on the team.
Well, I really believe his approach at the plate has gotten a lot better. The mechanics of his swing have gotten a lot better. You know, he's quieted down his approach. He's using the other side of the field. To me, once he got control of his barrel of the bat, and we, you know, these are things we talk about in a cage, you know, and it's not usually, you know, general conversation, but for a big league hitter, you have to have control of the barrel and know what it's doing. And early in the season, he did not have control of his barrel and could not just hit the ball the other way. And like even in batting practice, like, you know, just hit line drive after line drive the other way. Now you watch him and he's got control. You know, I thought one of the great at bats that he had the other day was he got behind in the count with a man on third and one out. And he took a couple sliders down and in and didn't chase and then got a pitch up and away and hit it to left center field and flew out deep to the track to drive in a run. And I just thought, now that is a really good big league at bat. Now, we all know if a guy hits a home run, okay, that's a great big league at bat, good. You know, you get a hit. But when you're battling in an at bat and you're not chasing pitches that are just out of the zone, and then you use the other side of the field in a situational hitting situation, a situational hitting position you're in, that's good baseball. And it's not easy to do, and he's doing it. And that's, you know, and then you look at the way he affected the game. Rick Mundy came into our booth after game two and said, who is, and not in his words, but who is that guy in center field? Because he is amazing. And you're talking about a guy who played center field at a really high level for a long time in the big leagues and Rick Mundy. Pete is opening eyes around the league. It's pretty amazing.
Did it remind Rick Mundy of Rick Mundy?
He did. I don't think so. He goes, that's the fastest kid out there I've seen. He just outruns the ball. Mo was a good center fielder, but he also hit 32 home runs in the Cubs uniform from the leadoff spot, so he had that going for him, too, I think.
A little more pop in his back. Great stuff, Coom.
Well, he was just really good.
You're the best, Ron. Enjoy Colorado. Don't get the air too thin.
We'll be okay, I think, here in Colorado. Enjoy the weekend. I know it's Big Bears weekend again, so hopefully they'll do some good this weekend, too. So have a good weekend, boys.
Thanks,
Coom. Thank you, Coom. And you are listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealer. And it's not a game, Illinois. We are going to keep the conversation going with the great Mark Grody.
Grody time.
And don't forget, before speaking of Grody, before the game, before Chicago takes on Houston, tune in Sunday evening from 5:30 to 7:20 after the Cubs game for your local Ford dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score. It's presented by Aurelio's and you can join Olin Krutz, Patrick Manley, and myself. We'll get you set for the game. And then immediately following the game, the aforementioned Mark Grody will join Olin and Pat, and you'll get instant reaction on the great Clips post-game show presented by Wonderverse. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Yeah, not only Joe Mixon, they got Laremy Tunsil, who I believe is, if not the best tackle in the league, definitely a top two, top three, and also on the other side, Titus Howard, who came out with me, who's also a respected tackle in the league. So they have a good line up front and definitely a very talented back. So we got to bring our
what? Love it.
It's Grody time, and that means it's time for Mark Grody with Mully and Haw.
Bears.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Grody time! One of our favorite times of the week, the great Mark Grody, one of the finest teammates known to men, joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Good morning, Mark. How are you, sir?
Morning, Grody.
Mully and Haw, good morning to both of you. How are you guys feeling this morning?
We feel excited to speak to you, sir.
Feeling good, Mark. Morning, Mark.
Morning, Mark.
Morning, Mark.
Morning, David.
Hiya,
morning,
Mark.
Moon. Morning, Sun.
I love you to make fun of me. I love
good
that.
Morning, Moon.
It's been a while.
It's been a while, yeah. Thank
good
you.
Morning,
I got to refresh the act a little
thanks,
bit.
Mark.
So act two coming soon.
I loved your little, as we just heard there, it said, love it. At the end of that comment, love it.
Well, because I was sort of in my head, I was on to the follow-up question, and I needed to let it breathe a little bit for the laughter that was occurring from the rest of the media, because he swore. It's funny when players swear. Actually, I think some people in life, some actors, some athletes, it just sounds better when they swear. Like, there's a natural ability to work swear words in without it sounding completely ridiculous. Montez Sweat, one of those guys. Good for him.
Is he too potty mouthed to be a captain? Is that why he was rejected as such?
Wow, we're gonna track evidence throughout the. Well, there's another example. No, in all actuality, Mully, I don't know if it was directly related to Montez Sweat smacking the ball out of Caleb Williams' hands in training camp.
Sure.
But I did ask Montez Sweat about that the previous week. You know, in terms of how anxious he was to get out there, because it was obvious you were anxious to get out there because your head coach had a talk with you to tone you down a bit, and you know he had learned his lesson over that. But I'm sure that some of that stuff factors in, not to mention the fact that he's only been here for, you know, half a year and change. But then again, Kevin Byard wasn't here last
year.
There
you go.
Think though that he was cussing or saying some things under his breath or maybe out loud after his first game. Look, you watch the tape, and he wasn't bad, but he wasn't as obvious as Montez Sweat has on occasion been for the Bears defense. The Bears defense are not going to complain about that effort or his performance, but
no.
Mark, did he have a sense that he could have been more impactful, and do you expect him to be Sunday night?
Yeah, he didn't really say anything about like his game in terms of it needing to be better. I mean, I think he seemed to be pretty satisfied with the blockers that he was keeping track of and gobbling up and allowing. You know, this was a perfect game for the defense in that the Bears proved that they can do it without Montez Sweat actually making a big play. Now, he's obviously containing a lot of guys, but he allowed DeMarcus Walker to eat. Isn't that what we wanted? We wanted to see who's going to eat on the other side. DeMarcus Walker was allowed to eat. Daryl Taylor was allowed to eat. So it was, I mean, and they affected what happened in the secondary, allowing Tyreek Stevenson to get a pick six. That was DeMarcus Walker's pressure. Jalen Johnson, the pressure from DeMarcus Walker as well. So I don't know if you're him, Montez Sweat, I don't know how you could be unhappy in the first week, especially when you know, Haw, that he's going to eventually make his presence known, and there will be games where it's all Montez Sweat and where the hell is everybody else. So this was a refreshing start to the season defensively.
I'll back off, Grody.
Yeah,
okay,
I can't believe you just went after Sweat. Haw, check me out, Haw. You better have some better questions coming up in the 5 o'clock Bears report.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
Hey, to everyone, keep listening, and you'll get your chance to be a part of a live studio audience for our September 25th broadcast. We're going to be on from 6 to 10 at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. We'll be joined by Bulls head coach Billy Donovan in studio during the 8 o'clock hour that morning. Breakfast with Billy, it's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. Through it all, I'd like to invite you, Mark Grody, to come and join us and to maybe ask a question of a Billy Donovan.
Will Montez Bozzelus be there? Only if Montez Bozzelus is there. If not, that's my whole thing for the Bulls this year. If he is present, I'm there.
I'm pretty sure he has to carry Billy's bag as a rookie. Oh, no, wait. Maybe not.
I did see Kobe White at the Bears game. I saw it. I was on the
I saw Kobe White there. And the aforementioned Bozzelus threw out the first pitch at a Sox game.
Oh, wow. How was it?
I don't know. I just saw he did it.
You picked the right sport.
You'd have to watch the
So nobody's watching. The ratings are down to six.
No.
Six
mainly
people.
People are just releasing statements about the Sox and their performance.
Yeah. Yeah, those statements. That's what happened? Okay. Well, you should have just said something. Gotcha. We'll leave you alone.
Hey, this segment with Mark Grody brought to you by your local Ford dealers. Shop now at buyfordnow.com. And I know we're joking around about the pass rush, etc., but I would say that C.J. Stroud represents not just a step up in class from Will Levis, and I would not rely on C.J. Stroud to be the guy that gives the game away late, but is it possible that his performance a year ago ends up being sort of a negative? Like, he was almost too good, and the expectation level now is almost unfair to Caleb Williams?
In terms of what Caleb is going to do?
Of course.
Now, I think this is a big night for Caleb. I mean, I think Caleb Williams, no matter what he says, is going to view this as, I got to show something under the bright lights. It's just so obvious, you know, the bar that C.J. Stroud is. Of course it's not fair, because C.J. Stroud is an outlier, and most rookies struggle badly, as we saw Caleb Williams struggle badly last week. So it's a tough spot to be in, and Caleb Williams tried his best to compare himself to the other quarterbacks this year, other quarterbacks of the past, and trying to learn things. The thing about C.J. Stroud, though, is that, you know, last couple days I've been watching closely the Indianapolis-Houston game, and what, you know, everybody says poise, arm talent, but God, he is so comfortable in the pocket. He plays quarterback with great ease. The playmaking is just, it's so smooth. There's a play that I was just watching a little while ago before I came on with you guys in Indianapolis last week in the second half, where he's flushed out of the pocket, rolls right, and then finds a guy open in the middle of the field, about 20 yards downfield in traffic, to Nico Collins, who's a pretty big target, pretty good guy to fling the ball to, but he is just so comfortable. Like, yesterday I was trying to find the comp, and I know that we'd like more modern day comps, but he's got that precision of like a Troy Aikman, that systematic precision, and he's not at Tom Brady level, hang in the pocket and then flush out when you have to, but that's where he's headed, just so comfortable in the pocket and get out of there when you have to. And I know that's what Caleb Williams is going after as well. We might see the same thing out of Caleb, but just watching C.J. Stroud in his one game this year, but he looks very comfortable, and hopefully, you know, Caleb Williams will show some of that as well, as we know he's capable of doing.
Mark, this whole week, I think, is everyone's prone to a little overreaction, so I don't want to overstate maybe Shane Waldron's first go-around not going so well. Still have a lot of confidence that he can be an effective play caller as long as he gets the personnel groupings right and gets in rhythm and some of those other things. In terms of ball distribution, in terms of carries, we were talking earlier, we know that DeAndre Swift is the number one running back. How does Roschon Johnson fit into the mix now that he is off the injured list?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know if any of their trust or faith in him has been altered. It feels like since DeAndre Swift came here, David, it's been all about him, and everybody, all the other running backs have just kind of been, you know, obviously you're going to have the depth chart in 1, 2, 3, but it's almost like they've been pushed way down. Like Khalil Herbert, as we know, non-existent last week. They think Velus Jones Jr. might be a running back. Hard to get that sentence out of my mouth. So I just think there's been I don't think they wanted to come into the season running a ton, and I think DeAndre Swift was their guy. But, you know, to your point, with what is coming at the Bears this week, yeah, you want to have your best blockers available for sure. Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter coming at you. The ex-Bear, Mario Edwards, who had a flattening sack of Anthony Richardson last week. That's not easy to do, to basically body slam that man. So there are some guys on this team that they must be aware of, and you cannot have a situation where, you know, you're the last resort and you're whiffing like we've seen Bears running backs of the past do. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, really excited to get to this game, because you got to feel that there's going to be more for Caleb Williams. You got to feel like Shane Waldron, who, you know, might be under as much scrutiny as Williams, is going to figure out a way to either run the ball or get the ball out or take a deep shot, whatever it is that is needed in the moment. They need more plays.
Yeah, hey, if Caleb Williams, if we are comfortably going to call him the best quarterback prospect the Bears have ever had, then you're damn right that there's going to be pressure on Shane Waldron every day, and there should be pressure on him every day. He got the job where he gets to coach a generational guy, supposedly an elite quarterback. So yeah, he needs the scrutiny. He should have the scrutiny. Now, I look at this game, and first of all, we got to find out today who's in and who's out, because if Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze are out, that changes things considerably. But he did admit yesterday, he did take responsibility for not getting the ball spread around enough. I really think going into the season and into the game that, you know, you got these three wide receivers. I think that was the plan. Let's use these big-time playmakers. And I know everybody was upset that Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett weren't getting their hands on the ball, but I do understand where they're coming from when they got these. Yeah, this was the point.
Cole Kmet, yes. Gerald Everett, no. I think Cole Kmet has a gripe. I'm not sure about Gerald Everett. I don't think that there was that much consternation surrounding the Gerald Everett snub.
Well, I'm just saying, my overall point, David, is that, but like, while what happened? What did I miss?
You missed David. Jumped firmly down your throat.
I think the Cole Kmet conversation,
I think he's still
is valid.
Mad from earlier in the hit. Oh, so yeah, boy, yeah. Are we going to make it to 5 o'clock?
I don't know. Your mockery of him is what set him off.
Brody, you coming after me?
Are you mocking me?
You mocking me?
Yeah.
Is that you, Hall?
Check me out, Hall. But anyway, Gerald Everett, Cole Kmet, of course I want to see them use more, but to some degree, and the offense was bad, and that's on Shane Waldron. Don't get me wrong. I am not out here trying to defend the offensive coordinator, but I understand that going into the season and in the game plan for Tennessee was, hey, you have Keenan Allen, Roma Dunze, and DJ Moore. That's going to be the game plan. And of course, you need to distribute better to Cole Kmet. No matter what we want to say, that was bad. I think that there will, I mean, with those two guys maybe being out, you're probably going to see more of it. You're going to see them try to, hopefully they don't fall behind 17-3, where they, you know, have to essentially abandon the running game. But I do think, especially in this game where you have to, you know, it's like the theme forever. Caleb Williams has to get rid of the ball quickly. They have to use the running game, because that defensive line will knock you down.
I heard Matt Eberflus, the head coach of the Bears, say that he was proud of Tyrique Stevenson for winning the Defensive Player of the Year award. That would be a real compliment had he not been proud of Velus Jones after the game on Sunday.
it sort of loses the meaning just a little bit. Is that what you're saying, Molly?
I don't know. Is that a good thing when he's proud of you?
What does it mean, Mr. Eberflus, when you are proud? Maybe it means anything. Maybe it's like aloha. It means hello. It means goodbye. It means whatever.
That's an interesting answer.
It's contextual. It's all context, man. You know?
Yeah. Brody, 30 seconds. What's your pick?
Oh, boy. After all of this, I have the – all right, get ready for this, because I don't think anybody's doing this. I have the Houston Texans beating the Chicago Bears 31-14.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. That is
And I almost had 34. Yeah, I think here's what I think. You want a little specific?
Please.
I do think the Bears will have the ball first. I think that they will have a terrific first drive on which they score. They will go up. At the extra point will be good. They will go up 7-0 early in the game. But then I think Houston just kind of powers past them, and the Bears score a later touchdown to make it look a little bit better. I just don't have a good feeling about this game. I think the Bears lose it.
Thanks, Grody. Talk to you later.
See you, buddy.
You better be ready at 5, Haw. Best be ready.
I'll be ready.
You, Molly.
Yeah.
Bye.
See you, buddy. Yeah, David filling in this afternoon on the afternoon show.
That's what he was referring to.
That's why it's this afternoon. Yeah. So at 5 p.m., Mark Grody will be doing his Bears hit, and David will be
thanks for the warning.
Bringing back similar questions.
new ones, I would imagine. I'll refresh and renew, yeah.
Okay.
Context will change.
Make sure you ask him about being proud.
I
know we're hammering that one, but it was kind of an oddity.
There's something I want to talk to you about when we come back, baseball-wise.
Okay, good. We need to get a little something different just for a minute
before
we get back to the Bears.
Okay.
Baseball next. Molly and Haw on the score. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
the White Sox.
White Sox. White Sox. Go, go, White Sox. Let's go, go, go.
Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You have a baseball question, unfortunately. It is regarding the White Sox.
I want to know what you think of this. So, ChicagoTribune.com, they have a weekly Chicago baseball report. This morning, it includes plans by Related Midwest, which is in cahoots. That's the wrong word. Which is partnering with the Chicago White Sox to propose a new stadium at the patch of land called the 78 in the South Loop.
Cahoots is the right word.
Okay. 62-acre lot. There is now a makeshift diamond that they have built at the site. They enlisted the help of the sod father, Roger Bossard, and they have had basically time to put together a mock-up baseball field. They don't have any funding, but the pop-up field, as they're calling it, already has hosted neighborhood kids who were invited to play on it, but not ready for any games, has no seating. And on Monday, Related Midwest will host a river tour to the site for a select group that is expected to include some politicians. Media is not invited. I think that somebody told me Frank Thomas might be involved.
Mm.
And this is still an attempt to create some enthusiasm, some momentum for a project we haven't talked about a lot this lost season, but still exists in terms of a possibility. Related Midwest is not going to let this go away. And there's a pop-up field on the South Loop patch of land called the 78, if you were wondering what is going on there.
Well, I mean, my initial reaction is they have ostracized their fan base so much, you could probably just play a game there. Because you don't need stands. You don't need any people. They don't really care if any people turn up.
That's so mean.
And then the government can pay them off for the fans that don't show up at the 7.
Okay.
That's my initial reaction. Is that mean? I don't think that's mean. They don't care. I think they should bring the milkshake. And
be a nice touch.
And that would be pretty much the
on the
season.
River on the river tour.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Have the campfire milkshake ready.
Yeah.
On the river tour. The campfire milkshake, by the way, I think has a Twitter account now, perhaps, or maybe it's an Instagram one. I was followed by something campfire milkshake related this week.
Is it from the team?
I don't think so.
Or the stadium?
I think
or
it's probably somebody smart aleck fan.
That's pretty funny.
Got to be a smart aleck fan.
Yeah.
I'm
not overwhelmed by it. I don't know that it will help. I don't know.
I'm not overwhelmed by it either.
I'd like to say, oh, God, give them whatever billions they need.
No, and I'm not suggesting that you should say that. I'm not suggesting anybody is going to go there. It is a data point. It's something to keep in mind that this is not going away.
Pop-up stadium.
They still believe that there's a chance of developing this land for that purpose. If they weren't, why would they bother going to that much trouble? There's a baseball field. Let's go out after the show. Let's take batting practice.
I'd say get on.
Can anybody go?
Get your members only jacket on and get out there.
I don't own a members only jacket.
Oh, I thought.
Oh, I thought you were talking to me.
Oh.
I didn't know you were sending a message to the chairman.
What happened to your members only jacket?
I think I got rid of it in the 80s.
Did you have one?
Of course.
I never had one.
Members only? That was like how you were cool. I think it was the 80s. Yeah, it had to be the 80s.
Not a starter jacket. Not a starter jacket. A members only jacket.
I'm thinking.
Don't confuse them.
I have to go. What's the difference? Members only is like the fallish coat, right?
You look like Al Davis in the members only.
Do you think I look like Al Davis?
No, but okay. I think Jerry might.
It's interesting to me. I found that little nugget in the ChicagoTribune.com this morning interesting because of all that it represents in terms of the continuation of a quest that not everybody's on board with. And it's going to be very difficult to fund. Yep. And as the Tribune headline said, build it and they will fund. I don't know.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect since they have ostracized anybody that would ever have wanted to go see them play in person to build a pop-up stadium with no stands at all.
Thank you. Dustin just texted us in the chat a picture of the members only jacket. Yes, I had one of those.
Really?
And it was
you really are from Indiana.
Thank you. I'm proudly from Indiana. Yes, it was olive green. I wore it for a period of time. I like olive green. I think I still have an olive green jacket, not like this one, but it's a favorite color of mine.
Okay.
Thank you, though.
Wow.
Dustin. And thank you for the insult, Molly. I really appreciate that.
I'm here for you, buddy.
Yeah, I know.
I'm here.
The geographic insults, the references to my Hoosier heritage are always appreciated.
Well, they were very yes. popular probably about 15 years before you bought one.
Probably so. And now I'm looking at a starter jacket. I never owned a starter jacket because they were really pricey.
Well, I mean, there were people getting mugged over them, I believe, right? Wasn't there a lot of... It was a very pricey jacket.
Not in Indiana.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go.
All right, let's go back to Bears.
Let's go back to Bears. We'll go back to the big story of the day. We'll do that next. Mully and Hawn.